Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow following the best weekend of football that I can remember. And I know we tend to get all hyperbolic about that sort of thing, but you guys, that was crazy. And I know I don't have to tell you that, because if you're listening to this podcast, you were right there with me. But these games were not just fun. These divisional games we just watched were historically good. Every single one of them came down to a kick as time expired. McPherson from 52 to send the top-seeded Titans home. Robbie Gould, and this feels like a good time to remind you it's Gould, not Gould. He hit his from 45 yards out to send the top-seeded Packers home. Then on Sunday, Matt Gay from 30 sends the GOAT home, making it, by the way, 3-for-3 road team sweep to that point in this playoff round. That's only happened twice in NFL history, that three road teams won the divisional round, had never before happened that all four road teams had won, and that was in the mix up until the last game of the week, and the Bills took it right down to the wire with a three-point lead, with 3 seconds left in regulation until Harrison Butker changed that with a 49-yard field goal to send the game to overtime. Not only has that never happened before, that every game of a single playoff round would come down to a kick with no timeout, it's never happened that many times in an entire postseason. Also a first, the three lead changes that we saw in the Bills-Chiefs game in the final 2 minutes, arguably the best game in the history of the NFL, and Tracy Wolfson was right in the middle of it for CBS working the sidelines for the network broadcast, and she's going to join us in just a minute to tell us what that was like. And then we will talk to Dante Whitner, 11-year NFL DB, 2-time Pro Bowl safety, played for the Bills and Niners and Browns and Washington, and now does the Niners pre- and post-game shows for NBC Sports Bay Area. He has been saying that the Niners were a Super Bowl squad for months now, and he'll tell us why they are. He also has some interesting thoughts on why they should keep Jimmy G. I'm also eager to get his thoughts on some of the defensive decisions that we saw at the end of games this weekend for the Bucs against the Rams with a zero blitz against one of the best quarterbacks in offenses against the blitz in the NFL this year. And then obviously the Bills defense in that 13-second drive by the Chiefs at the end of regulation in which they decided to play off Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. And did you hear the post-game comments from Mahomes and Kelce about that, talking about the 25-yard pickup to set up the field goal? Kelce didn't run the route that was called because he said he knew that the Bills were going to try and take away the sidelines, so he told Mahomes that he was going to go straight up the middle of the field. Mahomes said, do it. He did, and the rest, as they say, is history. And obviously there's second guessing to do now with regard to the Bills' decisions. Most egregiously and certainly most talked about, I think, their decision to kick the ball into the end zone for a touchback after their touchdown, a move that took 0 seconds off the clock, while a squib kick would have been a little bit more helpful in that department. One thing I do want to say, though, about Sean McDermott's coaching decisions that I think we will not talk about as much today, and hopefully this won't break out into an analytics versus the world conversation. They tend to do that, I know. He did go for it on fourth down 4 times in this game, including twice on the first drive, and he converted every single one, or they converted every single one of those fourth down attempts. And if they didn't do that on that first drive, go for it on the fourth downs, they didn't score a touchdown on that drive. And since we so frequently revisit these decisions when they don't work out, and Brandon Staley specifically comes to mind right now, I think we do have to remember when they do work out and when it's vital that they do work out. Because as we now know, Buffalo needed every point that they could get in this game, and that aggression helped put much needed points on the board. Certainly not enough, now we know, to beat the Chiefs, who will take on the Bengals next week in the AFC Championship game, a team that beat Kansas City just 3 weeks ago, coincidentally, by 3 points on a field goal as time expired. Tracy Wolfson was on the sideline for that game with her broadcast partners, Jim Nance and Tony Romo. All three of them will be back on the call this Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern for CBS. In the meantime, though, she is going to join us on the heels of the game that she calls the best she's ever worked, and I cannot wait to hear all about it. Let's go ahead and break the huddle.
Hello, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready?
Tracy, are you recovered?
No.
I'm not. I walked in, first of all, at like 3 a.m. So I'm still kind of like in a, you know, a blur. Everything's a blur to me. And I woke up and I was like, oh my God, that really happened. You know, and you process it after the fact. It's really hard when you're in the moment to appreciate what you've been a part of. And then you take a step back and you're like, oh my God. And I've been a part of some incredible games, and this one surpasses it all.
I feel like most of us are still in a state of shock about what we watched last night. And I found that happening several times this morning, where like random moments will pop into my head and I'll be like, I can't believe that that happened. Which are the ones that you have reprocessed?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was first Dawson Knox wide open in the end zone. And I was like, how did he get wide open? Right. And then the Chiefs come back, and then Dawson Knox again. What was it? 40 seconds later, he's able to get it out to him. And you're like, how does he keep getting open? You know, I'm sorry, not Dawson Knox, but Gabe Davis. You're like, I don't get it. You know, 4 touchdowns. Like, how is this guy? And, you know, for the Chiefs situation without Tyrann Mathieu, they had to certainly overhaul some things. But you were like, no way. And then, of course, 13 seconds left. And you're like, why did they punt it? Why didn't they squib?
Yes!
Why did they leave time on the clock? And I think that's what everyone has come out frustrated by.
Yes.
And that was a huge special team snafu. I mean, we've seen this all throughout these divisional playoffs. The special teams have come down to it. That's what it's come down to. And so 13 seconds on the clock, and it's kind of like Brady-esque. Do not give the ball to Patrick Mahomes at the end of the game.
Tracy,
they will find a way.
I was watching Josh Allen and Gabriel Davis hugging, and there were shots of it on the broadcast of them hugging on the sideline. And I was literally like, please stop, please stop, please stop. Because like there's time on the clock, and I just feel like this is the shot that they use against you later on.
Josh Allen, and I don't get to see all that. I do have a little monitor with me, but in those moments, I mean, I can't even focus. I'm focusing on the game and what's going to happen post game and all of this. But there was a shot of Josh Allen's boot and his dad and the family celebrating in tears. And you're like, oh my God. And that's really what happens. You come out of this game and you're like, you know, wow, what did I just witness? But on the other side of it, and I got on the plane last night and I was like, I feel so bad for Josh Allen and the Bills. I mean, they were right there. They tasted it. They felt it. It was right there.
That was my dominant emotion as soon as the game was over. I felt very similar to the way I felt after the Raiders Chargers game, where I was just in shock and sad that we weren't going to get to see more Justin Herbert, that he wasn't going to go to the postseason because it felt like he was so deserving, especially after that game and that performance. And then that's how I felt about Josh Allen last night. Like, he was perfect as a quarterback. He was exactly what you want him to be in the biggest moment. He came up as big as he possibly could. He scored touchdowns with like 1:54 and 13 seconds left on the clock. Yeah. I mean, that is a game where you should walk away the winner.
Yeah.
So I think I would have felt the same way about Kansas City at the end of the game. It just felt like it was unfair that anyone had to lose.
And, you know, a lot is being made of the overtime rules. And I was there for that AFC Championship game when Patrick Mahomes was on the other side of it and Tom Brady got the ball first and they scored. And, you know, Kansas City's like, wait, that's so unfair. We didn't even get our shot. And I mean, I don't want to discuss that into, you know, length, because I don't think that's, you know, let's not take away from this game and the win. But wouldn't it have been nice to see Josh Allen and the Bills go back out there? And oh my God, like, maybe you just do it only in the playoffs, because who cares at that point? You know, you just you play until you win at that point. And more Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes would have been really great.
It would have been. So it's funny that I wonder if they will go back and talk about that, because obviously that was brought up. The Chiefs brought it up at the owners meeting the year after that happened to them in the postseason, didn't even come to a vote. Owners just threw it right away. Not interested in redoing that. Do you get a sense that, like, now that it's happened 2 times and people are so frustrated, or do we have a very, like, we forget things as soon as they've happened. So I don't know if we'll still feel passionately about that in a couple months.
Yeah, but I do think there is a fight for it. Like, I think no doubt it warrants a conversation. you know, and I think it would be fun. And I don't think it has to be a regular season, all season. I think you can just implement that in a postseason if you want. And I think it would be interesting to see. Why not? I think there are two things I think they should go more to the college rules on. That one and the pass interference. So to me, if you go to the college rules, pass interference, and you just get that 15-yard penalty, it's not as penalized.
Not a spot foul.
Those are kind of the two that I would go back and look at in the offseason. But I mean, let's not take away, you know, of course, from the game. And I don't think that should be the rhetoric afterwards. It was, you know, with New England and the Chiefs that year as well. But I just do feel bad for the Bills, especially after coming off that other perfect game. And you knew, honestly, I didn't know if they can do that back to back. I was very, you know, concerned. And I, you know, everyone was asking who you pick, and I never pick, but I'm like, Chiefs at home after the Bills have just come off the perfect game. How do you do it? And you know what? They proved us all that they are, you know, a team warranting to be in the AFC Championship with a shot for the Super Bowl. And two straight years, I feel so bad.
Those are numbers we're going to look at historically. Like, we're going to put up the numbers of the Bills in the postseason and then be like, and they didn't go to the Super Bowl. They didn't even make it to the AFC Championship game. Josh Allen's numbers in the playoffs this year, 637 yards passing, 134 rushing, 9 touchdowns, no interceptions. Dude's not going to the championship game. It's unreal. What did you see on the sideline? How did the sidelines change as the game went on?
Yeah. So it was just a wave of emotion, but you know, the Chiefs are always very like calm in those instances. It's like, we've been in these situations before. They've been behind in several games in the playoffs in their past with Mahomes and Reed together, and they've found ways and they never panic. That's just kind of, and I didn't see that from the Bills either. There was a little, not panic, maybe some frustration early. You know, earlier on in the game, I think they wanted to see Diggs get more involved. And then all of a sudden that was the deep Gabe Davis touchdown. And so there was a little bit of like, they were in it. So it was just such quick emotions. That's kind of what it was. There was frustration, certainly on the defensive side by the Chiefs when they gave up those two big plays, but it was just kind of happening all so quickly. And there was never panic. I was not on that Bills sideline at the end of the game because I had to position myself for the post game interview, depending on what happened.
We saw you on the sideline. You were in the shot.
Yeah, I was. I see. I don't even know. But yeah, I'm just standing there. So I didn't get to see kind of that like high to low of Josh Allen. I saw it on the field after I saw him walking off. What a wonderful shot, though, that we got of Patrick Mahomes breaking up the celebration and running after Josh Allen. And I'm going to get a chance to talk to Mahomes tomorrow for our NFL Today. I'm going to have a sit down with him. And I can't wait to ask him about that moment, what he said to Josh Allen. And you can tell, even just in the post game with me, how he appreciates this and what has taken place. And I have been fortunate to be part of that Manning-Brady rivalry for so long. That was not a bitter rivalry, but almost like an appreciated, they appreciated each other. It wasn't, you know, Raven Steelers, right? It wasn't like an AFC North battle. It's just these two tremendously talented quarterbacks that understand what they have with two tremendously talented teams around them going head to head year after year. And I think we're going to see that. We are seeing that. And I talked to Andy Reid before this game and I asked him that question. And he's like, we don't worry. You know, we don't think about all that stuff. He said, but a rivalry is established. And that was before the game. So, I mean, this is not the last time we're going to see Patrick Mahomes. And I think they're playing in the regular season again next year, which is how it was with Brady and Manning in different conferences. They found a way to play each other every year in the regular season and then meet up in the postseason. It's
such a fun time from a quarterbacking standpoint. You bring up Brady and Manning. I've been talking a lot in the last few weeks about like Burrow and Herbert, and like you have Mahomes and Allen, like these four guys taking over, like as we see Tom Brady leave the playoffs and Aaron Rodgers leave the playoffs, and it's like the new blood comes in and we are just set up to have so much fun for the next decade or so in this league. And they're all such likable guys.
I agree with you.
They're fun to root for, all of them.
Have personalities and energy. And I think we can maybe add Mac Jones kind of on the peripheral. We don't know right now, right? We don't know yet because he's in such a great system. He did exactly what he needed to do, but how impressive was he? His composure, his completion percentage. I mean, he was just, he did exactly what he needed to do this year. And we haven't gotten a chance to see his personality because, you know, the Patriots hide it a little bit, especially when it comes to rookies.
No one has personalities there.
Right. So, but I love the personalities of these young quarterbacks in this league right now. And they're all in the AFC. How fun is that? I mean, as a CBS reporter, we love that. I mean, it kind of makes me feel like when I first got into the SEC and all of a sudden it took off, it was literally like, wow. You know, and you had 10 years of like amazing rivalries and games. And while, you know, those teams certainly change because it's college, it feels similar to that, that we have like a 10-year mark here that could be really incredible in the AFC with these quarterbacks.
How have you observed with your front row seat and your ability to talk to these guys in production meetings? How have you observed Josh Allen change since he came into the league and kind of step into the role that he's in now?
I think it's confidence, and it's not, he's always been confident, but I think he went to almost like, wow, I can't believe I'm here to, oh my, I'm here and I deserve to be here. I think that's the biggest difference I've seen from him. He really appreciates where he's at, the team around him, the city of, he is the perfect quarterback for Buffalo. He embraces Bills Mafia and all that it brings. And he's such a likable guy. And anyone you talk to in that locker room would run through a wall for him. And he would do the same for them. And that's why it is, you know, such a perfect marriage there. And that's what you've seen. You've seen that confidence just grow. And we saw that, no doubt, you know, this season, you know, week after week after week being just so, you know, rarely did he have a big game and just he would own up to it if he did something wrong. But he just was so stable, so composed, so, you know, just, you know, taking ownership of that team. And it's incredible to watch these quarterbacks develop. And you're right, they're very different too. I mean, even though, you know, Mahomes is very similar to that, but their personalities are different too, right? And you see Herbert. Herbert's got that energy, but he's also a little bit reserved. We haven't really seen the true Herbert yet. We will. Are you a Chargers fan?
I'm not. I am this year. I don't have a team, so I'm not a fan. My husband and my son are Rams fans. So yesterday was very dramatic in our house watching that game. But I have kind of like, I just love, I live in LA and I love the way that the Chargers play. I like Staley.
You can't help that's not root for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Herbert is incredibly easy to root for, yep, for all of the reasons. And so, yeah, I definitely am leaning towards the Chargers these days. Getting on that bandwagon early, Tracy.
No,
let me ask you about Gabe Davis. Did you have a sense going into that game that he was going to be as important to them? No. Okay. No.
I mean, no chance. And, you know, I think I asked the X factor of the game to Josh kind of going in, and he said Dawson Knox, but that's what happens when you take away a Knox and a Diggs. You find those, you know, second, third, fourth ride receivers that step up, and they've been stepping up the whole second half of this season. I mean, that is, Gabe Davis has sneaky, he's been sneaky and putting together those numbers and a trust that he's had with Josh Allen. And when you start taking away those number one, two guys, and we even see it, you know, we see it all the time with the Chiefs, because you're going to take away Tyreek Hill and you're going to take away Travis Kelce. And then a guy like Pringle or Hardman or McKinnon or someone's going to step up in those roles. So that's where you saw it. Did not think, I mean, he was going to have a performance like that. I mean, four touchdowns and over 200 yards. And you're like, I mean, what, where did that come from? And like, why, you know, deep, yeah, you know, long touchdown passes.
How did the game go as you expected? And how did it not?
You know, look, I think I expected it to be a back and forth affair.
Whoever has the ball last.
I did expect whoever had the ball last. There was a moment when the Chiefs had the ball and they had three plays and they didn't put it in Patrick Mahomes' hands. And then they did that trickery at the end there and it didn't work. And that point of the game, I was like, what just happened there? Like, you have the best quarterback. Why'd you take the ball out of his hands? And I saw Patrick walk off the field during that point. And he was like, you know, shaking his head, like almost like not necessarily disbelief, but real frustration there of like that they had the opportunity to go in. I think they settled for a field goal at that point. I can't remember because it was such a long game. But, you know, I said at that point, I was like, uh-oh. Like, that's kind of when I'm like, you had the opportunity to put this game away almost with the touchdown, and they didn't. And I saw Eric Bieniemy go over to the sidelines, and he was writing out the next few plays of what was going to happen on the next drive when they got back. And I could tell, like, he was even frustrated by it. So not that this has anything to do with how I thought it went, but I felt like that was a really pivotal moment for this team of regrouping and saying, okay, we need to make sure we have the ball in our quarterback's hands at all times. That's what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to the playmakers. And it did. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. That's what happens.
I'm curious about what the last few minutes were like for you, because as a sideline reporter, and you brought up a really good point. Like, I don't even remember how that drive happened, because so many things are all happening at once and you're trying to keep so many different channels going in your brain at the same time. And at the end of that game, your walk-off interview scenario is changing like every second, you know, for crying out loud, 13 seconds. Holy cow. So what those last few minutes, what were they like for you in terms of you trying to figure out what your next step was going to be?
Yeah, it's watching the game and understanding what's happening at the same time with focusing on, okay, where do I need to be in position? What are we going to ask? What is happening that we have to make sure that we ask, you know, and then you're just trying to make sure you're not missing anything at the same time. But, you know, something happens, you can't run to the other sideline at this point. You have only 13 seconds left. So you're giving up your position if you go and check something else out on the other sideline. Fortunately, I have a great sideline producer with me this week who was able to man that sideline for me. I mean, I didn't even talk to the Bills about who I was going to, I mean, we knew I would interview Josh Allen if they win, but I didn't have communication with them because I was on the other sideline. And at one point I felt as though the Chiefs were going to win. Like, they were in that position. And then of course they come back and I, you know, you're just kind of trying to pivot at all times. And, you know, it reminds me of the kick six I did with Auburn and Alabama. That was by far the best game I've ever been a part of until this. And it was in the same moment where I was prepared to interview Alabama and then the kick six happens and I got to refocus on Auburn. And all of a sudden the whole field, you know, everyone storms the field in college. You're like, where are you going? And then at the same point, you're trying to get, you know, communication with your truck and with New York of it's going to be live. It's not going to be live. This is who you can get. You need to get someone else. I mean, there was a lot going on at that time at the same time trying to figure out what's happening. That's your main focus. You know, you want to watch the game, see what's taking place and make sure you're in the right position at the end. But you kind of lose track of what happens earlier in the game when you're so focused on the ends of the game. I got to go back and watch it again.
It's an interesting energy moment too, I always think, because like you want to meet the excitement of the moment,
yeah,
you know, but you don't want to be too excited because you don't want to be like fangirling out about it.
But it's true. I tend to be too excited when that happens. And I didn't get crazy in the interview, like as excited as it almost was weird. I watched it back. I was like, wait a second. Like, I think I was just kind of so in shock also of like what took place. And Patrick, I know, is an interesting, he's so even keeled in these interviews. I mean, he's not gonna, you know, we saw Joe Burrow after, or if Allen, they're different. Patrick just knows how to handle these interviews in such a, you know, appropriate way. And it's not coaches talk, but you know what I mean? And that's what he did. And I love the word. I love that he said, you know, number 17, he played it his ass off today. That was like big for Patrick Mahomes to come out and say, because he's not like that, you know? So I tempered my own emotions in terms of trying to like, just be focused on the interview. And then I asked him, of course, to describe it. And then Chris Jones came in the picture and
yes,
throws him all off. And you know what? It's just at that point, it doesn't even matter. You're just, it's so great to hear from the quarterback of the, and you have to remember that. And a lot of times, you know, and I even find myself getting into this, it's really just keep it simple. Like, just let them talk, just toss it up to them. It doesn't really matter what you ask, as long as you're getting their emotion and their reaction from that moment. But I did notice, I was like, wow, I'm usually like, I usually have the biggest smile on my face. My everyone always says it to me. They're like, you look so happy out there. It could be me interviewing Tom Izzo, Michigan State, after they beat Michigan. And I'm devastated because my Wolverines lost, and I will have the biggest smile on my face. That's just how I am. That's, as a sideline reporter, I think it's really important to match that moment.
Totally.
And show the, you know, the quarterback, the fans, the players, the coaches that you're in it, just like they're in it, no matter who. Yeah.
What was it like to be in it in that one? Just from an energy standpoint in that stadium, how did it feel? Because I mean, you've done a ton of games and been in a ton of stadiums where the crowd's been in it. And like, did it feel energetically different in there?
It was down that stretch, and the team and the defense was trying to rally up the crowd, and they got the false start on Josh Allen there. I mean, they were hyping it up, running around, come on, come on. And that Chiefs Nation, Arrowhead, it is always loud. It was exceptionally loud in that moment. And you didn't hear many Bills fans throughout that game. They overpowered it. It was just overpowering. And it was loud. It was electric. You get the fireworks going. I mean, and you sit back after it's done and you're just like watching the celebrations out there. You know, the fans that stick around for so long to watch it. And they feel like they're your best friend too. You know, they're like, Tracy, we won. I don't know, you know, someone like 10 rows up. But I love that. I mean, I've done so many Chiefs games in the last few years that you do feel like you're part of it. And it's really memorable. It really is. And that one, no doubt, it was probably the most memorable.
Now you get another Chiefs game.
Yeah.
a rematch of a game that you called in week 17.
Yep.
At Arrowhead again, Chiefs, yep. Bengals. What are you, as you shift your approach? I mean, you said already that you're going to sit down with Patrick.
We sit down with Patrick tomorrow. That's for the NFL today. Then we're going to meet with the Chiefs on Friday, the Bengals on Thursday. You know, we can't do these in-person interviews anymore, which kind of stink, but we know these two teams pretty well, although I haven't seen Cincinnati that often. And I'm going to be on the Chiefs side. We're going to have Evan Washburn with us this week, and he'll be on the Bengals sideline. So we will be splitting the job down the middle. So,
oh, that's huge. So you can just focus on one team.
You know what? It's actually really nice. I don't want to say I love having a game to myself, but there is something really, like, you feel like you can do it. I do it every game. I mean, there's something really nice about running back and forth and finding out, you know, the different storylines and pitting them together. But in a game like this, when it's this big, you could just really focus and get all in on one team. And, you know, basically our role in games that, you know, enormous is really just focus on the game. You're not telling stories, basically. You are really what's happening on the sideline that is relevant. So there's definitely a different prep, different mentality, that anything you're going to get has to be really relevant to this game to be able to use it. But it forces you to kind of dig deeper, reach out to different people, and, you know, make sure you're prepared for those moments. But yeah, I'll be with the Chiefs, and Evan will be with Joe Burrow and the Bengals for this one.
Yeah, I don't know that people at home understand how hard it is, and hard is a relative thing, I understand, but how hard it is to do the sideline of a game, because you have to understand what's happening in the game. You have to watch the game. Like, people at home are just watching the game. They're looking at all of the details that are on their screen, but you're also doing that while keeping an eye on all of the things that they can't look for, all of the things that are going on in the sideline, taking an ear out so that you can kind of listen in and see what kinds of things they're saying in the huddle, what kinds of behaviors are you observing. Like, you have to have these two channels and ability to multitask. It's much harder than it looks.
Yeah. You know, I found it yesterday. I was really doing a lot of that multitasking, you know, trying to listen to both of these, you know, sidelines and the benches, and focusing on some injuries, you know, that I was dealing with, especially Tyrann Mathieu and an injury. And you tend to not be able to focus on the game. And then you're like, wait, I got to catch up. What just happened? And, you know, I feed a lot of stuff to the production truck so they have it, even though I might not use it. And one of the things we got in our meetings was how Andy Reid had talked about the Bills cornerbacks, defensive backs grabbing and holding, and they wear the red gloves for their red gloves to match the Chiefs uniform. So I thought, you know, so that's an interesting thing. So I had reminded, so I'm like, hey, just a reminder. Oh, and they had called a holding call or whatever it was. And I was like, just a reminder, you know, what Andy Reid told us. And they go, yeah, we had it on the air like 5 minutes ago. We talked about it 5 minutes ago, but I didn't know, my ear was out. I was just reminding them, you know,
yes.
And you know, those are the things, like, you just sometimes are out of it. You're focusing on something totally different, then you have to get back into it. So there's a lot to that. And then even just, you know, halftime interviews, your position, you have to be in a certain position in order to make sure you get the coach at the right time walking off. Well, something could be happening on the other sideline there. And you're like, I can't get anything. I can't even run over there because there could be a late injury. You're just kind of, it is a multitasking job. I mean, that's how you're listening to the guys in the booth. You're listening to your producer in the other ear. You're taking one ear out. You're listening to the bench. You're trying to listen to a coach walking off. It's a lot, but that's what makes it so fun,
yeah.
You know, and people ask me all the time, like, do you want to go into the booth? I love being down there and I like being kind of that investigative reporter and
yeah.
finding out what's happening and then juggling all of that.
To me too, once you get to a point in the season where all of the stories go away.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's not my favorite part of sideline reporting, or the stories. Like, I like reporting, you know? So if you put me in a position where something's going to happen, I'm just going to tell you what I see. I'm going to tell you, you know, what I asked about based on something that's going to happen in the game when the thing happens. That's the fun stuff. And this is
that's what I love
that time of year.
I say that all the time. I'm like, I don't want to do these, you know, fluff story pieces. All my stories are relevant. They're based on player specific if they do something. And so half the time, they're just thrown out the window. A player gets hurt and you had six stories on. I had a lot of stuff on Cyril Grayson in that game and against Tampa Bay, and he hurt his hamstring early on. And you're like, okay, there goes. That's a whole dump of, like, you know, three stories I had if he had a good play. But that's how you prepare. But they're all stories that are relevant, or they're kind of educating if they're newer players, right? If they're guys that have just come onto the scene, like a McKinnon or a McKenzie for their side or whatever it might be. But I do, I love that too, that hands-on stuff. When you ask a question in meetings that you can utilize, really good, really good. But it's in these type of games, you're not getting much on, and it's okay. That's just how it is. Everyone wants to watch the game. They don't want to watch me. They want to watch the game.
I agree. I totally agree. And then in some ways it kind of takes the pressure off, because you don't have to feel like you have to be selling stuff all the time. Just sell when you know that there's value added, you know? Yeah.
The key also there is making sure, the one frustration you can get is when you're selling something and they can't get it in for whatever reason. And you're like, this needs to get in.
Yes.
Like, you know, if you miss it, one, it's going to be all over Twitter in like 5 minutes. And you're like, oh my God, you know, we had injuries are tough. I'm of the camp of like, we got to get it. If they're important, you got it. I don't care if they give me the official word or not. But it's very different than, and have you done college?
Yeah.
That's why, because me and you, we come from this college world where you can report everything you see,
yep.
right?
Yep.
You can listen into the huddles. You can report. You can't really do that in the NFL. I mean, one of the first games I did was a Tom Brady New England game for CBS. And I reported what Tom Brady said to his guys. And it was nothing but like, come on, let's get fired up or whatever. And I got a call from the NFL. The NFL called the truck and they're like, she can't do that. I was like, wait a second. I was able to do that, you know, every week in the SEC.
What are you? What are the unwritten or written rules about what you are allowed to report based on what you're seeing and hearing?
To be honest, you can't quote anyone. That's really what it is. But I've learned I would never now say what Tom Brady is saying. He's just that, you know what? He's mellowed out. So who knows, right? Maybe it was more of a New England thing. But they watch everything. A lot of these teams watch every game over again and see what you said and see what you talked about. So I've learned to kind of just massage it a little, right? Change the wording.
So if Tom Brady comes off the field and lays into one of his wide receivers, do you report that he laid into that wide receiver and just not use the words that he said?
Yeah. And I would just say extremely frustrated, specifically at, you know, I use that a lot because you can't half the stuff, by the way, you can't even air what they say. Right. So you are changing the words anyway.
Are you saying they say bad words on a football field?
you know, they, oh, it's always all rosy. It's all perfect. But so that's kind of how it is. It's really just finding how to word it so you can capture the moment, you know, in the right time and kind of tell the story. But that's the best part. That's what I loved about college games, being able to say everything, you know, the offensive coordinator came over and said exactly what he said. And you're like, you can't really do that, especially because they feel there's a competitive advantage there. I think in one of my reports, I was talking about mixing up coverages and they're like, the other team's going to hear it. Well, the team knows that they're going to be mixing up coverages. I mean, that's not giving away something, but there are times I hear things on the sideline that they're saying, like a line coach of what they want to do or someone they want to go after or something specific. I will tell Tony off camera. I'll open up the mic. I'll say, this is what they're talking about on the sideline. Just a heads up. Maybe you can utilize it instead of reporting it on the air. And that helps. That helps them.
That's how he's the first guesser that he's become known to me.
It's all me.
Okay. I have a question and this will probably interest like five people, but cause it's super sideline minutia, but in terms of when you're selling stories, are you on this network broadcast selling your stories? Do you have a separate producer in your ear or is it the game producer? Because okay. So that's crazy to me, right? Because the game producer has so many things going on and then you have to, and I think this is one of the hardest things about selling stories is you have to kind of time it. And if you're like, this is super important, but I realize you're also, you've got a lot on your plate right now because I realize that you're, you know, going to break or coming back from break or whatever, but like, please listen to me. How do you gauge like when to hop in so that you will be heard?
Lindsay, I really wish you can just have one of my earpieces for a game. Listen to what is taking place in my ear, honestly. And it's different for the number eight crew also to the number one crew. There's promos, there's ads, there's sponsorship elements, there's game breaks, there's all these required paid things that you have to get on the air. There's a Romo report, there's Next Gen, the amount of, and oh, by the way, that's besides everyone else wanting to talk, right? It is the amount of stuff that has to get in. I walk out of those games and I am dizzy and like, I feel beat up. I could only imagine, well, I talk to him all the time, but my producer, Jim Rukoff, who is, I mean, he's incredible being able to handle and juggle everything. And by the way, all the personalities and everyone talking to him at the same time. And by the way, throw in Jay Feely with us and now Evan Washburn. So we're all like, we all laugh among, like, we know we're all talking at the same time. And Jim's like, okay, have Jay and Tracy and Evan all talking to me at the same time. Stop. It's hard. But could you imagine if you had a separate producer? Well, then it's the producer telling the producer. So that's just, you have to cut that out. I've learned commercials, great time to say something. Make sure you can get that in. And then there's been a joke all season long. I'm always like, Jim, Tracy. And they're like, there's no other woman on this crew. We have our graphics. Our BA is a woman, Brooke Wagner. She's amazing. But no one else is talking to Jim except me. I'm the only female, but I'm always saying Jim, Tracy.
Like, you're like the dad who sends text messages like, hi, Tracy, it's dad. You're like, yes. I know I have your number saved in my phone.
He's like, you don't have to say Tracy. It's the funniest thing. So I always can crack up every time I do it. It's like, I'm so used to it. Anyway, I'll be like, you know, Jim, I have something, or Jim, I can add. I try and like, and he trusts me so much that what I'm going to add is I don't have to tell him. It's going to be relevant. I'll say I can add on the defense. I can add on Patrick Mahomes. I can add on this. So you kind of streamline it, but the job that Jim Rukoff does is incredible. And it takes a certain personality. It takes patience. I mean, sometimes he just wants to, kill all of us, right? It's just like, stop. I mean, there's so many personalities, everything going on at one time. And it's a big role that he takes on, but that is a challenge. It's a great point you bring up. And especially in such a big game with all the stuff we do have to get in, plus all of our personalities and the other extra roles that come into it, you got to find the right time to sell it. And then sometimes also reminding them because they forget. And I'm like, we never got the the Tyrann Mathieu injury and we got to get it in, you know? And he's like, I got to introduce the quarterback and I have to, you know, do this next gen stat and I have to do this. He's like, remind me after this play. But sometimes they forget you know, they have so many other things going on. It's crazy. I really wish you could witness it because it is insane what happens in my ear.
Are you, or were there any stories yesterday that you walked out and thought, man, I wish I got that on?
That's a good question. I had some good stuff on, we did the Andy Reid chocolate cake, comment, and we didn't air it, about the quote of how hungry they are to get to another Super Bowl. And we asked Patrick the response. I'm not going to tell it to you because maybe we can still use get it on this week. Exactly. So to me, that's funny. I mean, I love humor into a broadcast. I think that would be, and it also extends to Tony and Jim, and they can have fun with that. So we didn't get that into the game. Certainly if I went back, I'm sure I have a bunch of just add-on stories to right. different players that never just, you know, came to be, which is fine. There was nothing I really sold that I was like, oh, we can't get this in right now. It's just the bad time. It's bad timing. When a game is that good, you don't even worry about it.
When looking ahead to next week, are there things that you know immediately, like this is on my radar to track down? This is on my radar. Obviously the Tyrann Mathieu injury.
Yeah, I think that's the big story. I mean, I could tell right when he took himself off the field that he did not look right. And that scares you with a head injury because usually you feel like they can get back in time for next Sunday. But, you know, when you see someone not, you know, in a great, you've seen head injuries and sometimes you don't see them react. They just have head injuries and they don't clear. This to me, I saw almost like a reaction to. So I'm hoping that, you know, maybe it was just, you know, during that time, maybe he can clear in time for Sunday because he is a huge part. And it's not only on the field, but what he does on that sideline. And I did notice that without Tyrann Mathieu, the DBs were kind of just there. I mean, they're young and they look to him. And, you know, on the defensive line, you have Chris Jones and Frank Clark and Melvin Ingram, and they bring so much energy. But then you have this group of DBs and you have Juan Thornhill and Treverius Ward and Sorensen. And you're just like, you can tell they needed someone. And their DBs coach was all on top of them, but you could tell they missed Mathieu. So I think that's a big one going in. And I think there's something to coming off such a crazy emotional game like that. How do you regroup? How do you refocus? You know, and look, it's just kind of a talking point. There's nothing really tangible there, but how they do handle that, how do they discuss it is interesting to me. Because I think there's definitely could be a little bit of that letdown, and maybe you do see it, you know, early on where they have this slow start and then they, you know, and then they get back into it because maybe they come out almost like, whew, we just played an AFC championship game. You know, that's kind of what it's like. So I think there's that. And then I talked about the hunger for, I'm talking more Chiefs, the hunger of getting back to a Super Bowl, especially after, as Travis Kelce said, they were embarrassed last year. And they truly believe that this offensive line, and we saw what happened last year, this offensive line doesn't get enough credit because I remember the first week of the season, I did that game and they were just building it, but they said how good they could be. I mean, look at how far they've come. And now to take this offensive line, if they can stay healthy for one more week and they can win and go into a Super Bowl, it's going to be a completely different Chiefs team than we saw last year.
They're such a great example for a lot of other teams too, who need to rebuild their offensive line. And
the Bengals? Maybe,
well, exactly. Right. Cause if the Bengals can do what the Chiefs did last off season,
right.
Whew, which I think out.
That what's great about the Bengals is they're so young that they're all under contract, all those stars. They don't have to worry right now. And you can focus on that offensive line. It's going to be fun to see how they handle the environment. I love Burrow because he has that that cockiness to him, and he'll come in there and he'll be confident. And they just beat Mahomes and the Chiefs. It was a different kind of team, and there were some guys missing and whatever. But still, I mean, he understands how to, you know, beat the Chiefs, and there's no lack of confidence. I'm so interested to see how they protect him. And I am interested in seeing the defensive line and how they're probably licking their chops right now, knowing that they can get to Joe Burrow.
And how he handles the moment, because like you've pointed out, like he's handled all these big moments really well and he has a ton of confidence, and I'm sure he will, But we've seen it time and time again. You know, sometimes it takes a couple of games in the postseason to really figure out how to play in the postseason, how to handle these big moments. We've seen it with Josh Allen.
Yeah, you're right. And not press, right? Yeah. Like not say, you know, like try to do too much.
Like Aaron Rodgers could use a lesson in that, it seems. And he's been in the league for a million years.
I know. Isn't it incredible? It is incredible what has taken place this whole divisional weekend. What we've seen, who's left standing, right? And, you know, I think Kansas City feels there's a good opportunity here if they can make it back to the Super Bowl. But could you imagine if it's the Rams, it's the Bengals, or it's the Niners? I mean, all those three teams, I don't think any, I mean, I think maybe the Rams at times, I mean, you would know people thought that they had a chance, but still, I mean, look at what we're left with, which is so
if it's
fun.
Niners, Bengals. Oh my gosh.
Right? I know.
It would be an upside down world.
It really would be. It would be. I don't have that Super Bowl this year, but I'm sure we'll all still be watching. That's the great thing. It doesn't matter. Everyone still tunes in.
Well, we'll be tuning in to watch you next weekend. Tracy, thank you so much for your time.
No problem, Lindsay. I always love talking to you. You know that.
Up next, more on what we just witnessed this weekend with one of the NFL's hardest hitters from the first 16 years of the century, a man who literally tried to change his name to Hitner. He covers the Niners now for NBC Sports Bay Area. And man, has that turned out to be a fun team to be on board with. Donte Whitner joins us next.
Hear what's happening around the globe on World of Basketball.
Future NBA first round pick, Dyson Daniels.
You know, growing up for me, I always thought I was going to go to college. You know, that's usually the route that people were taking. But when I was at the NBA Academy for a little bit, the people like Josh Giddey, LaMelo Ball, who came through the pro route, you know, that opened up the pro route a little bit more for me.
New episodes of World of Basketball, hosted by Fran Fraschilla, are released Thursdays on the SiriusXM app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Donte. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for having me.
So you have been around football for quite a while. How would you put into perspective that weekend of games that we just watched?
I would say it's the best weekend of football since I've actually been involved in the NFL. And I got drafted in 2006, played 11 years. I've been covering the 49ers for 4 years now, covered Ohio State for a year. And, you know, during all this time, that's the best weekend of football. I think that having the extra game, having the extra playoff team has added to the excitement of playoff football.
Are you like me? I feel like the Bengals Titans game was like 8 years ago.
I do. I feel like it's, you know, it was sort of a distant memory for me as well. Not that exciting. People aren't remembering it right now. But I tell you what, Joe Burrow, he has something up his sleeve. And, you know, the game that he put on the first time versus Kansas City, it was amazing. Over 400 yards thrown. I believe two or three touchdowns. So I don't think that it's going to be a cakewalk for Kansas City. I think Joe Burrow, Cool Joe, will have something to say about that. But yeah, the rest of the games have just been amazing.
Yeah. 30 for 39, 446, four touchdowns, no interceptions, a 148 passer rating. Yeah, we're going to have a lot to look forward to in that game and in the NFC side next weekend. Credit where credit's due. You said like 2 months ago that the Niners were going to the Super Bowl. They're not there yet, but they're making you look pretty good. What did you see then that it took the rest of us a little while to catch up on?
Well, a different style of football than anybody else plays in the NFL. It takes me back to the way that we played during the Harbaugh years, where we were really tough up front. We couldn't be blocked. We could play a number of different coverages. We had guys that conceptually understood what their job was. And you have guys like Kyle Shanahan, D'Amico Ryans that are teachers first, which means they teach what the opposite side of the ball wants to do and how to counter that. Then they put a game plan together. So even though the 49ers were losing early on, they went 3-5, they were in all of those ball games. They were making mistakes that they typically didn't make. They had a lot of injuries. They didn't have a running game. Bosa was just back off an injury. They had to get Arden Key in his role, had to figure out to move Eric Armstead inside, figure out the cornerback situation. But they consistently played hard. They consistently paid attention to detail, and they were in every game. Even when they lost to Green Bay early on, even when they lost to Seattle, the 49ers just always found a way to beat themselves. And I just figured that if they could just eliminate half of the negative plays that they were having in all three phases, then they could potentially put on a run. And once they beat the LA Rams the first time, and really played bully ball, really got to their identity of running first, getting Deebo Samuel the ball, running behind Trent Williams and these guys, I figured that they would be a tough outing if they could just get hot at the right time. And we all talk about it. Just get in the playoffs, get hot at the right time. Well, the 49ers are the perfect depiction of what it means to get hot at the right time and might have a chance to come home with the trophy.
100%. It's like unfair to have Trent Williams, by the way. That one play where they put him in motion to run block, that should not be allowed.
Yeah, that's an awesome play, but you have teams that are really looking for that now. You have defensive ends. They're afraid to get a guy that's 330 pounds
running
4'6" and hit you in the chest. But you better believe that Kyle Shanahan has something off of that, some type of trick play coming.
So let me. Trent Williams got a little banged up in that game, though. The fact that he left on crutches is highly concerning to me. Debo also had to go for testing after the game and was banged up in that one. Kittle came up limping. Are you at all worried about health going into this next week's game against the Rams? Could you see any of those things being problematic for them?
I don't believe so. The 49ers have dealt with injuries since Kyle Shanahan has been here. Jimmy Garoppolo has missed time. Trent Williams. They've had multiple guys out. George Kittle with a calf earlier this season. They've always found a way to plug guys in and have them prepared to go out there and play championship football. When everybody else is playing at a certain level, you have to reach that level. And they're all banged up. When you play physical like that, that's what it takes to win a championship. You're not going to ease into winning the championship. When you're putting everything on the line, when you're sacrificing your body, when you're giving the maximum effort like Tart and all these boys are and flying around, you're going to come up with some nicks and some bruises. But I don't think they're too bad. I think that they'll be healed up. They understand the situation at hand, and you'll see the brand that the 49ers have exemplified and shown over and over and over. And that's just a run first physical football team. So I'm not worried about Trent Williams. I think that, if he doesn't play, his backup has had some time to get ready. And even last week, Trent Williams missed with an elbow. So, yeah, I think that they'll be prepared no matter who's out there. But they have to have Debo Samuel.
They have to have Debo Samuel. Debo's the X factor.
For sure. Yeah, that's the X factor.
How did the game against the Packers go in a way that you expected, and how did it not?
It went in a way that I expected. I expected them to come out hot. They went on that 10 play drive, 75 yards. They spread the ball around. And that's what these West Coast offenses specialize in. That's what Aaron Rodgers specializes in. The plays that they practiced the most, they came out, executed. They want to jump on you early.
The Packers.
The Packers.
Okay.
But the 49ers had some counters for that on defense. The first game they went out there, they just showed them everything, showed Aaron Rodgers, the top quarterback in the league, what coverages they were playing. A little bit of arrogance, like saying, we can just show you. No. He shredded them apart. There were multiple penalties all in the first quarter, and the 49ers fell behind. I knew in the second half they would come back and they would counter that. It was great movement from the secondary guys. They were poised. They brought some late blitzes, and the defensive line stepped up. They were getting hot at the right time. Going into the game, a 31% pass rate. I was arguing with some guys on Twitter, some of the Packers guys, and Peter Bukowski and all of them. And they were telling me, this defensive line can't put pressure on Rodgers with four man. Well, if you disguise properly, you can. And even in my pregame show, I broke it down to where, if they do these things, they'll give themselves a chance. And they did them perfectly. The defense kept the 49ers in the game. I knew that it would take a tremendous effort from Bosa and the guys up front. Eric Armstead, they stepped up. He had two sacks. He's been stepping up at the right time. One thing that I did expect going into it, I expected some special teams blunders. I didn't really know which side it would come from, but it looks like the Green Bay Packers special teams unit, they crumbled at the right time.
Willis, to say the least.
Yeah, Willis moving the long snapper around and going through and getting the block punt, who fumbled, picking it up, scooping it up and scoring. And then Jimmy Ward, after the big play that he gave up, he's supposed to like stay back, play cover two. He got a little greedy, read the eyes of Aaron Rodgers and got set up for that big route. Tart giving maximum effort. That sequence of three plays epitomizes what the 49ers represent. I'm explaining to you. Number one was Jimmy Ward giving up the play. The backside safety who had the angle, you never see Aaron Jones really get caught in the open field. He had to give tremendous effort, which means that there was no place for a loaf. Some guys on the backside are like, oh, Jimmy Ward's going to make the play or somebody else going to catch him. No, he's hauling ass the entire time to get him on the ground, knowing that that's very important right there. The next play, Bosa beats his man, gets the forced fumble. Now they can't get closer in field goal range and just go ahead and have a chip shot. Jimmy Ward playing every play like it's his last, jump through the D gap and block the fumble. I mean, block the kick. That epitomizes what the 49ers represent. It's more so effort than it is skill. And that's what it's going to take to beat them. And I don't know if anybody out there can rise to that level of football and physicality right now.
God, and the coaching too, because, you know, it was a weird weekend in the sense that I feel like there were a lot of kind of egregious coaching mistakes. And you could probably say that after every game, particularly in a close game, it comes down to like a decision here, a decision there, but the special teams gaffes in Green Bay, and there were many. You give the Niners a lot of credit. Obviously, they deserve credit for the way things went on special teams, but like 10 men on the field on a game-winning field goal, are you freaking serious? Like, how does that even happen? It's absurd. And then you had the Bucs blitzing so much against Stafford, who is, by the way, very, very good against the blitz. That doesn't make sense. And then a miscommunication on that play against Kupp. Like, how does that happen? And then the Rams in the second half, where to start? Why'd you take the timeout? Bills defense at the end of the game. I mean, God, you could like write a thesis on all of the coaching decisions made there about, you know, they didn't put the kick in play, like they didn't go for it on fourth down. There's lots of things that we can go back and look at there. Were there any coaching decisions that you found to be like particularly egregious?
I don't think I've seen any that were particularly egregious, but I do realize that when you get in the playoffs, everything is magnified. The pressure of the moment not only affects the players, but it affects the coaches. You know, something that you typically wouldn't have called during the season, you might call it or take a chance in the playoffs. And that's why I have to give D'Amico Ryans his just due. The game plan, the looks, the pre-snap looks, the late blitzes, taking chances late in the game, really telling players sometimes you have to vacate what you're really taught and understand the situation, understand the moment. And there were times where, you know, Jaquaski Tart, who's supposed to be in the middle of the field, knew that they were only throwing the ball to one receiver. And when it came down to that moment in the game, he just stood on that side of the field. He said, you know what? You got to throw it somewhere else. You got to prove that in this moment you're going to do it. Aaron Rodgers didn't. And he had people coming wide open on those last few plays.
Lazard.
But Aaron locked in to, when you live by the sword, you die by the sword. And there were times where if he would get that dig route in there, they probably would be playing this weekend. So I'm not going to say that it's his fault, but sometimes it is Aaron Rodgers' fault. And when you live by the sport, you die by the sport.
I saw somebody say, and I thought, you know, it with examples that Aaron plays differently in the postseason than he does in the regular season, that he stops trusting the offense and goes into like hero ball where he feels like he needs to make the play all the time. And that example that you just gave where he passes a wide open Lazard, it could have been a touchdown. Who knows if it would have been a touchdown, but he was wide open just to go throw the ball. Right. I mean, like that, if you look at the dots, it looks like it just goes right past Lazard to about 10 yards by him into double coverage there. Why would you do that?
Well, Hufanga, who's a rookie, was in the middle of the field earlier this season. He had a pass interference. He took a really good angle, got his head back around. But it looks sort of like the 49ers, some guys were blitzing, some guys were playing zones. So I'm not really even sure if it was a blown coverage. But even if you look to the guy to the flat, to Aaron Rodgers' left, he's wide open. And that's something when Aaron Rodgers sees pressure, he typically throw the ball there. Or he'll just, you know, he understands that the double is going over there, the dig is coming. He'll check it down in the middle. For some reason, if you look at his helmet on film, he's really just locked in there. And Tart, he kind of knew that Tart was supposed to be in the middle of the field, Leslie. But since Tart stayed to the side of Davante Adams, he had to look, and he was almost like hesitating, like, I know you're supposed to be in the middle, but you're staying there. You're staying there. You're staying there. And he was just looking for so long. Eric Armstead beat the double team and made the sack. And that was the play on third down. So if you look at it, he's standing there. He knows where he's supposed to go, but he's not moving. He's like, come on, move. Come on, move. And then, yeah, he took the sack. So anybody that want to go out there and analyze that play, sometimes it is on Aaron Rodgers. That play was on him.
It's so weird that a guy with that much experience and that much skill, I mean, you know, it's so much easier to look at some of these plays in hindsight and say, woulda, shoulda, coulda, you know? But it is interesting that somebody of that caliber would make some of the mistakes that we saw him make in that game. From a quarterbacking standpoint, I think the thing that's been most interesting to me is that the Niners have had the success that they've had with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I know that people just beat up on Jimmy Garoppolo, and I don't want to beat that drum. But in the last four games, PFF tweeted out this stat. In the last four games, he has 10 turnover-worthy plays, how they grade them, two big-time throws, and three wins. It's incredible that they're able to have success considering the type of play that they're getting at the most important position on the field.
And when you look at all his statistics and when you look at the quarterback statistics in particular, one thing that really matters is turnover worthy plays. So that's whether you put the ball in harm's way, throw it into coverage, throw it to a linebacker, nearly throw an interception, make a bad decision, get a tip ball, something floats away from you. Fumble the ball in the pocket, that's what that is. He's around 4.6%. That's bottom of the league. Guys like Aaron Rodgers, they're somewhere around 2%. But in every other statistical category, getting the ball out quick, the second level things like controlling the line of scrimmage and getting guys to jump off sides and shoulder coverage, getting them in and out of the right play, he operates it very efficiently, which is why they have guys like Deebo Samuel that you don't necessarily have to throw the ball deep to. You can get them the ball quick. You can take, you know, low risk throws to, you know, get high probabilities of having success on that play, which is why Jimmy Garoppolo is like top of the league in yards per average. You can have guys like Ayuk, George Kittle, that's yards after the catch. You can have a good running game, a good screen game. So when they're operating it to high efficiency, they don't necessarily need him to be the top quarterback in the league slicing and dicing. Just get those turnover worthy plays down, a little bit more focused. We'll have this offense operating with maximum efficiency. It's all about those plays when we're like, what was Jimmy thinking on that one? Like even last week, that throw right before half, like you, Lambeau Field kind of makes you feel like that sometimes. You feel like you're Aaron Rodgers. See, I know how he felt when he got outside the pocket. But you don't have that type of arm strength, Jimmy. And I don't know where you thought that or where that came up in your mind. That was a bad play. But then you have throws like the three throws on third down to George Kittle. In tight coverage, getting the ball out quick. Third and 11, getting the ball to George Kittle. The one that George Kittle dropped, that would have probably been a 75-yard touchdown, right? So that's the good Jimmy. And if you could just minimize or get rid of those bad plays, and this is an offense that's hard to stop, especially when they can run the ball in a different plays and play action and added things and eye candy that they can do. So, yeah, I understand that about Jimmy Garoppolo, but also he wins. I saw a stat pop up that said Jimmy Garoppolo is somewhere like 40-something and 15 or 17 as a starter in the NFL, not just with the 49ers. I think that we need to readjust and rethink this Jimmy Garoppolo leaving San Francisco next year.
You think so?
I think that, listen, this is his second time as being the starter in 4 years. Two of those years he was hurt, and he has a chance to go back to the Super Bowl. Why would you get rid of a quarterback that took you to the Super Bowl twice in his tenure, whether he win it or lose it, just because you want to see the new toy or the new car? Why? Like, think about that. Erase all the stats. Erase how he make you feel during the game. Let's look at results. Two Super Bowls, been a starter 4 years, and one of the years he'd been hurt out the entire year. Why?
Don't you feel like you could upgrade the position, though, and take out, like, if you could get better at the position, then shouldn't you try to get better at the position? When it feels like, I mean, I hear what you're saying. They have managed to put outstanding pieces around him that make it less important that he is not the best at his position. Clearly, the coaching is top notch, and they scheme people into situations where Jimmy just has to not make 800 mistakes in the game, and then they'll be okay. But if you're looking at a quarterback and you're saying, like, it might be like the Rams with Jared Goff. You know what I mean? Like, they went to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff. Did he take them to the Super Bowl, or did he go with them sometimes in spite of his deficiencies as a quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, if you have a chance to upgrade, shouldn't you?
Yeah, Goff was a system quarterback. He made some good plays when they had a dominant running game, but he still had limitations. Jimmy has limitations. But okay, if any GM coach sat in a room and we all sat together and we said, okay, let's wipe all the stats out the way. Let's throw out the ups and downs and emotions of the season, the bad plays and good plays from every player. Do you want the trophy at the end of the year or do you not?
Well, 100%. Yeah, I mean, 100%. Obviously.
So
yeah.
That's the main objective, not stats or any of those stuff. The main objective is a team game, is let's win the trophy. If Jimmy Garoppolo wins the Super Bowl this year, what are we talking about? We're talking about a quarterback that just won the Super Bowl. You're talking about replacing him.
Okay, but if you're Kyle Shanahan and you're like, I have to work really hard around this, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have to be putting in extra work and doing extra things to make up for what I think you lack. Is that fair to the people on the Niners to make them like have to step up their game and be perfect all the time, more like above average? You know what I mean? Then they would have to be otherwise.
Yeah, I would think the standard would be for them to have excellence no matter what the play call is out there. And when you watch Kyle Shanahan's offense, it's never been about really the quarterback position. It's really been about taking advantage of the defenders and making the game as simple as you possibly can for the quarterback. It's about taking advantage of the undisciplined players, all of the individuals. So when he's doing the motions and the shifts and all that, it's not about the quarterback. It's about taking advantage of the defense, making them communicate, guys not being where they're supposed to be, so you can get the easiest throws that your quarterback can get. And yeah, sometimes they simplify it so much to Jimmy, and I'm like, why did he make that mistake? Just one more second, just one step here, just a little bit here, it's a big play. But then you watch him, and you're like, man, this guy's amazing. What about the throw to Kittle on the sideline right there when he had to make the one-hand catch? That was on like third down.
Yep.
And you watch it and you're like, if you could just eliminate these plays, I don't think that he's necessarily making everybody else have to play better. I think that he does have to eliminate those things, but he's still a young player in the league. Like Jimmy hasn't been around for 10 years. He's still a young player. He's what, 28 years old, 27, 28 years old.
I mean, we've seen enough to know what we're looking at with Jimmy, haven't we?
I think Jimmy has the opportunity to write his own story and his own narrative this year. He's been through a lot of ups and downs. He had a lot of people outside the organization. But when I look at the stats, Jimmy is up there with some of the top quarterbacks over the last 5 years when it comes to winning percentage, when it comes to yards per average, right? He's up there. So if he can really get his hands on a Super Bowl, I think that he can stop a lot of the critics. And I think that he possibly should be back in San Francisco next year.
But then why would they have taken a quarterback where they did?
Well, because at the time, I don't think they necessarily thought that he would get them back to this point. A lot of people was probably hoping or probably predicting that Jimmy was going to fail or not stay healthy. And that Trey Lance was going to be in there and the season would have probably been over by now. But I think Jimmy has battled these guys into position right now to where they're going to have to readjust and reassess and really think that, hey, do we really want to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo? Because Trey Lance getting out there doesn't like guarantee that you're going to win.
No,
it doesn't guarantee that he's going to get better and better like you expect him to. That doesn't mean that he's going to become this Mahomes type of quarterback. So you better be careful what you wish for. This is your second NFC championship and possibly second Super Bowl appearance in the last 3 years, and this is the quarterback that is taking you there. One throw, you could be possibly going for two Super Bowls away from, you know, possibly creating a dynasty or something. So I think that you have to stick with Jimmy Garoppolo. This is Jimmy Garoppolo's team. Ups and downs, this is his team.
Do they feel that way?
I think now they do. I think that now they possibly feel like this is Jimmy's team. With the throws last week, and there's multiple throws that he made in that game. And you hear Kyle Shanahan talk after the game and he praised Jimmy's throws. He never do that. He never get up there and say, oh, Jimmy made throws. Like, he really made throws in that game when I thought they possibly could have been out of it. Third and 11, the type of throws he made. Yeah, it was an amazing route from George Kittle, but the ball was there, the timing, being able to transition and run with it. That means a lot. And as far as on percentage throws, Jimmy is top five in the league. So he's an accurate quarterback. So you know, I'm a Jimmy Garoppolo fan right now. I've seen what he's battled through. I've seen him battle through the thumb. I've seen him battle through the shoulder. I've seen him knock out Aaron Rodgers. I see him knock out Dak Prescott. I see him come back and beat the LA Rams and Matthew Stafford. These are the top teams in the NFC and the top quarterbacks, and Jimmy Garoppolo is beating them all.
But see, that's the thing. Like, so yes, he has been the quarterback of a team that has beaten those people, but Jimmy Garoppolo has 17 completions in two playoff wins against the Packers. So it's hard to look at that and say, you know what? They beat the Packers because Jimmy Garoppolo is our quarterback. It feels like they beat the Packers in spite of Jimmy Garoppolo.
And that's just it. That's what people are looking for. Oh, Jimmy Garoppolo threw for 400 yards and they won because of him. You don't necessarily need that. How about Jimmy not turning the ball over? How about him getting the motions and the shifts down and getting the timing behind quarterback so that Deebo Samuel and these boys can run these sweep plays? Because that's not easy either. How about the play fakes and getting guys up like the second level and the second level derivative to quarterback play? How about the four offsides and making the defense jump and show it so that the wide receivers know their routes and are defined? It's multiple things. I think that when you look at a Kyle Shanahan offense and when you look at the type of guys like Deebo Samuel that's implemented, I don't think you necessarily need the traditional quarterback and the quarterback status. You need somebody that's going to manage all of these parts that can make plays to high efficiency and don't turn the ball over. That's all you need. That's what you need from the quarterback position with Kyle Shanahan.
Do you think that you can build a dynasty that can be there year in and year out and consistently competing for the Super Bowl trophy when you're in a league with Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen and Herbert and Burrow? You think you could build the Niners to be a competitive team against those guys with Jimmy Garoppolo as the quarterback?
Yes, when you brand a different type of football, but Jimmy's not on the field with those quarterbacks. It's the defense that's on the field with those guys. It's Bosa, it's Armstead, right? It's Arden Key, it's DJ Jones, right? It's building that defensive line that you can rotate to bring consistent pressure on these guys. He's bringing a young, brilliant mind like D'Amico Ryan's in that knows how to vary up his coverages. There's times where guys will go out there, and I thought Saleh was an excellent defensive coordinator, but he never varied up his coverages, and it was just too basic sometimes, which hurt the 49ers in the Super Bowl late in that game. They started to figure it out. They started to hit the divots in the defense. They knew exactly what was coming. Now you see last week, and you go back and watch that game, D'Amico Ryans is doubling Davante Adams' backside inside and outside, which people never do in the field. Which means you have two guys sitting flat-footed. He can just run through the defense. If you don't trust that the route is coming that you expect to come, they were right every time. Telling your safeties to sit on Davante Adams and make Aaron Rodgers go through certain reads, like different disguises they were able to do, I think that, you know, that affects these type of quarterbacks. So, and then giving your defensive line time to get there, going to get relentless guys like Bosa, going to get guys like Eric Armstead and figuring out what they do best, creating one-on-ones and having guys that can really get after the quarterback, I think that's when dynasties. And we saw that versus the Packers. The 49ers, they didn't have a first down. They didn't have a yard in the first quarter and a half on offense. But they were still only down 7-0. Why? Because the defense. D'Amico Ryan's the disguise, the defensive line. I think that's how you build dynasties. And your quarterback just don't mess it up. And have a good running game.
One last question about this. I did not expect to talk to you about Jimmy Garoppolo this much today. And I even started this by saying, I don't want to, like, you know, beat that drum of like, Jimmy's that's not fine. The guy. And I feel like that's been my whole argument this entire podcast. And I don't want to be that person, Dante. Don't make me that person.
That's a Super Bowl champion. We going to get it.
I love the faith. I love the explanations too. It makes a lot of sense. The last thing is with regard to building a team like that, is it important that you get Jimmy at a competitive rate? Because if you're paying that quarterback on the team that you're building in the way that you're building it, like you've described, is it important that you not pay top dollar for the quarterback, that particular quarterback, so that you can then put all of those other pieces around him that you have said are so important to their success?
Well, Jimmy's made a lot of money. I don't want to talk for Jimmy, but I think that they came with a competitive price, because I think, what is the going rate for a quarterback right now?
So much money.
$15 million. I mean, what is it? So when Jimmy got the $100 million, it looks like a bargain right now for what Patrick Mahomes and all these guys getting, $250 million, $160 million for Dak. He just put Dak out of the playoffs, right? What these other guys are making, I think what Jimmy's making now is it's pretty competitive for what the guys make on average. So I
now
think
it is.
Would possibly be okay with that coming back, you know, being a quarterback, operating, winning football games, understanding the system, understanding Kyle Shanahan. I mean, comfortability, that goes into play. So, yeah, I would think that that would be okay. I don't think that what he would ask for would be just like crazy money. I don't think it would be too far out of the ballpark. So, yeah, that's a question for him and his agent. But at the same time, if he can win a Super Bowl, I think that you have to sit down and talk and try to figure it out.
From a defensive standpoint, I'm interested to get your thoughts on the way the Bills defense played on that last drive against Kansas City. As soon as I saw Josh Allen and Gabriel Davis hugging on the sideline after their touchdown, I was like, please stop hugging, please just stop. Because you just knew, not that they were definitely going to drive the field and win the game, but it was Patrick freaking Mahomes in 13 seconds felt like enough to do some damage considering the score. They played off on Kelce and Tyreek. Was that the right call?
I think that it was the right call. Typically, when you're in those situations, they'll have somebody in front of the best players beating them up, giving them issues. Then they'll have safeties over the top. And it depends on what situation you're in. You have end of game situations for all teams. Sometimes you have sideline situations. So if you don't have a team that has timeouts left, you put a corner at the 10-yard line on the sideline. You put another safety that's 10 yards behind him on the sideline, and you put another safety over the top of him like a cover two, guarding the end zone. And it's so that you can't run those out routes and get out of bounds. You tell them to stay underneath the route, make them throw it inside, make the tackle. Then you have some where it's like, okay, we just have to keep them out of the end zone. So we're going to put guys on the goal line. We're going to put guys in the front of them, beating them up, and then we're probably going to come with a three-man rush. The way that they did it, I don't know if that was necessarily the best. And it didn't come out to be the outcome that they wanted. So it's possibly that they called it wrong. And you practice those things all year long. And when it comes down to that, it's just heartbreaking. Because at that point, it's like, was it scheme or was it execution? And then you're second guessing yourself. So going into those games, they always have a plan. But, you know, when it ultimately comes down to it, it's the players on the field execute.
It felt really tricky to me. Having never, you know, I'm not a defensive mastermind, but because of the thing you said, they just needed the field goal. So you can't just say, okay, we're going to play prevent. Like, you're just not going to get by us, because we also can't give up anything. Like, you can't let them drive the field enough to even just get in field goal range. So you're concerned about everything. Nothing can go right, you know?
And that's where they make it difficult when you have so many weapons like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, who really can't be covered by anybody one-on-one. So you have to take chances in those moments. You have to bring extra guys. You have to bring blitzes. You have to rely on being able to show the coverage and execute when the offense knows what you're playing. And that makes it extremely difficult, because these are top flight, top receivers, world-class athletes in the world. So to get up there versus a guy like Tyreek Hill, one-on-one, show him the leverage, it's almost like, you know, asking for trouble, right? So you have to be aggressive, but you have to not give up the big play as well. So what do you do? So it's a tough situation for a defensive coordinator to be in. My all-time favorite has been zero blitz, where you outnumber the defensive lineman, you sit the guys off at 5-10 yards. You can hit them with a surprise zero blitz, where you can show a coverage, know that they're going to snap the ball within a certain time, but your guys on the field have to execute. It's a beeline for the quarterback's via of his neck. Anybody that's late, anybody that gets double bumped, or in the way of another defender, you could possibly give up a big play. And that's why we would practice that all the time, Lindsay. When I was with Vic Fangio, when we were in San Francisco, we would practice how we would blitz, like on track. Like, you have to go on a perfect track when you're coming outnumbered offensive line, or we're going to give up a big play. Everybody that's covering, you have to be inside leverage, sitting, not backpedaling, trusting that the blitz is going to get there. If they catch a deep one, it's on the coaching staff, it's on the design or the blitz. I'm always with that at the end of the game. I'm not with playing off, because if you're going to lose, I'd rather go down being super aggressive.
Bucks went down being super aggressive. Zero blitz didn't work for them. What went wrong there?
Well, what went wrong there is when you don't play in the same division as the LA Rams, they can get the best of you. They can utilize the running game. They can, you know, throw the football. But, you know, when you get accustomed to playing them, you understand what they want to do. It's not that hard. That's why the 49ers have had their number six times in a row. I think that Tampa Bay was starting to they were flailing a little bit anyway. On the offensive side of the ball, they lost Godwin, they lost Antonio Brown, they had injuries at the running back position. It was going to be a miracle for Brady to really pull that off. That wasn't really the same team if you watched them the entire year. The LA Rams, they just got hot. On the defensive side of the ball, they're making plays. They got a young safety out there, 33, who's flying around. They have that defensive line. I don't know if you know, Aaron Donald yesterday, he was just unblockable. So yes. Many injuries up front for Tampa Bay. There was no way they were going to be able to block Von Miller and all these guys. So, yeah, I think the Tampa knew it. When you saw Brady's face at the end of that game, he didn't look devastated. He looked like, okay,
he stayed out there and shook hands, Dante. That tells me a lot about his mindset.
Yeah, he knew that they were a good team. He knew that they had a good front. He knew they had a lot of injuries up front. They were missing skill position. And it would have been a pretty much a miracle day for them to beat the LA Rams. And they almost tried to give it away. I think with the Rams, it's all about being a bigger physical team, not giving up the big play, and understanding what they want to do on offense. And what they want to do is they want to get the ball to Cooper Kupp short. They want to run the ball to keep it first and second. And I mean, get it to third and manageable. And then that's when they want to utilize the quick game of Cooper Kupp. One thing about it is the 49ers can generate the pressure and get the turnovers that Matthew Stafford is just begging to give up. I call him Tommy Turnover, right? That's what I call him because, you know, when the pressure is on, when that front four can get after you, he typically throws the ball into coverage. And that's what he's done the last few times versus the 49ers. And that's what I'm expecting on Sunday.
Ooh, well, very much looking forward to that game, as I know you are too. Last question before I let you go. Is your name legally Dante Hittner at this moment?
No. That stopped years ago. I actually put in all the paperwork to get it changed.
To Hittner.
Yeah. And then when it came back, they were like, if you're going to be able to change this for the NFL, you have to buy all of the jerseys that already has the R on there, Reebok jerseys, and everything that I own, any asset that I own, house, my car, anything, I would have to get it changed because of one letter, bank accounts, anything. So I'm like, you know what? That's a lot. That's a lot for one letter.
So says every woman who's ever gotten married and changed her name, okay? I know. That's I feel your pain there. That is a pain in the ass.
Also, you have to do that when you get married?
Yes, you have to change everything. It's like a full-time job in the months that follow.
Yeah, see, that's
a lot. You feel our pain now.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, I don't know.
All right, so there is a W. That never actually did happen.
Yeah. I almost did it. When that came back and it gave me that, I'm like, not doing it. Sorry.
Couldn't do it. Dante Whitner, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Man, so much to talk about, and we didn't even get to Rodgers' future or Brady with the Bucks or Sean Payton possibly moving on. Ian Rappaport reporting Sunday that he has not committed to returning to New Orleans, and Saints owner Gail Benson confirmed on Monday that they don't know what he's thinking. We're going to get to all that stuff on Wednesday, as well as a detailed look at the championship games. Again, that's Bengals Chiefs up first at 3 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on CBS. Then it's Niners Rams in L.A. at 6:30 Eastern on Fox. I hope you enjoyed the show today. If you did, and you would be so kind, we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a 5-star rating and leave a review. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app, which is free for most Sirius subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram, LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Immer. And a special thanks to SiriusXM's Senior Vice President of Sports Programming and Podcasting, Steve Cohen. Have a great week, everybody. I'll see you again on Wednesday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.